Yeah, it's recording now. It's just so fun to be with you again, Erica, and to have the chance to do this interview.
Well, we'll have to do this in a different way again.
I'm Gay Hadley, and I'm here interviewing Dr. Erica Bourguignon for the History of Women Project for the Ohio State University Archives. And it is October something. I can't remember the date.
It is actually November 1st.
Thank you very much. It is November 1st, 2013, and so we'll get started. Would you tell us first the jobs you held, the positions you held during the time you were at Ohio State University?
I only had teaching and some administrative positions. I came here as an instructor on a temporary basis on January 1st, 1949.
Oh.
And I eventually became chair of the Department of Anthropology and researcher and so on. And in 1990, I retired as an emeritus professor.
Uh-huh. So people who do not know the academic route quite as well as perhaps you do, and I do somewhat, you went from the lowest rung of almost the non-academic rung of the academic ladder and went all the way up through the ranks to the top.
That is correct. In those years, the structure was a little different. We started as instructors, and nowadays people start as assistant professors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, and will you talk a little bit about your family and your background and what led you to Ohio State?
Well, I was born in Vienna in Austria in 1924 into a Jewish family. My mother was a physician. My father had a law degree, but he didn't practice law. He was a businessman. In 1933, when the first anti-Jewish boycotts occurred in Germany, my father was convinced it was only a matter of time before Hitler came to Vienna, and he went to Palestine. And my mother and I followed him, and I went to fourth grade in Tel Aviv. That involved total immersion in Hebrew, which I didn't know. And it didn't work out, and Hitler didn't come to Austria that year, and we went back to Vienna in the fall of 1934. And we stayed in Vienna until 1938, when the Germans invaded, with the help of local Nazis, and there were violent, basic pogrom against Jews, beyond what the Germans were doing, who brought in Eichmann, who started his policy. And they brought in the German anti-Jewish policies that they had developed since 1933, but they did it all very quickly. We were fortunate to be able to leave. We left in the summer of 1938, supposedly for 3 months in Switzerland, while we were waiting for American visa. And during those that summer, I went to boarding school in the French-speaking area of Switzerland. The visa didn't come until 15 months later, and by that time the war had broken out, and my parents had run out of money. And
do you want a pillow behind your back? No.
And my father applied to a relief agency, and that is how we got tickets to go come to America by way of Italy.
Mm.
And it was a very bad trip through the Mediterranean, which was full of submarines. And we arrived in New York then in October, just after Columbus Day. And I then went to high school and to college in New York. In those days, colleges of the city of New York were free. And I graduated. I took some summer school classes. So I graduated in February of 1945.
From which college?
Hmm?
From which college?
Queens College, which was the youngest and the newest of the colleges. And I then went, I wanted to go to the University of Pennsylvania, but it was in the middle of the year, and so I spent semester at University of Connecticut in Storrs, which was tiny and in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And then I spent a summer at Yale on a project with the alcohol studies, which later moved to New Jersey, New Brunswick. And I didn't feel I wanted to go back to Storrs. And the professor I had wanted to study with at Penn was at that time at Northwestern, so I applied to Northwestern and got a tuition scholarship. And in the men I actually ended up working with, there really were only two major professors. Professor Hollowell, who was an American Indian specialist with whom I wanted to work, and the chairman of the department, Professor Herskovitz, who was very famous as a really early student among anthropologists of Africa and African-derived cultures in the Americas. Professor Hallowell went back to Penn while I was there, and I started in the fall of 45, just at the end of the war. There were very few students. It was a very small department. But Herskovitz got a grant from the Carnegie Corporation, which allowed him to send several students, a couple of students and a faculty member, to do field work. And because I knew French, having spent that year in Switzerland, he asked me, would I like to go to Haiti? But which I knew very little. But he recommended me to someone, really the only psychiatrist in Haiti, who had studied at the University of Chicago, or more accurately, in Chicago. And this man arranged for me to stay at the hotel where he and his wife had stayed years before. But before I got there, there was another member of our group who had stayed there temporarily. So when I arrived at this hotel and was waiting for dinner on the porch, a gentleman approached me and said in French, "Are you the person from Northwestern?" And I almost fell off my chair because he had been told by this previous visitor that one of that that graduate group would show up that day. And that is how I met Paul Bourguignon. Yeah. And years later we married.
Yes, so it's a very romantic story, I think.
Yes.
Wonderful. And so then you came, you and Paul came to Ohio State.
Well, I came back to Northwestern in the fall of 48 to work on a dissertation. Went to stay with my parents over Christmas break and was hired sight unseen to arrive in Columbus on January 1. And the reason for that was that the man whom I was to replace a man who was going to Japan to work on the social science division of the occupation. But he didn't come back after just one semester, and I stayed on, and I'm still here.
You certainly are. Many years and much distinction later, Erica.
Much work.
Just one more general question before we get specifically to Ohio State, but how have your various identities shaped your whole life? That is, your identity as a woman, but perhaps your identity as a Jew or other identities you would describe in describing yourself, and how have they shaped your life, particularly before coming to Ohio State?
That's a difficult question.
It is.
And it's one that I've tried to think about at various times. There are certainly times when I have felt discriminated against. And I wasn't always, I was never sure which of these identities was involved.
Uh-huh.
There was only one woman in the, what was then the sociology department, whose interest was in sociology of education, and who was at that point, I think, an associate professor. She never became a full professor. And she was in some ways marginal to the department. I was, for a couple of years, the youngest member of the department, and it took me a couple of years to finish the dissertation because I was teaching 15 hours and a couple of courses that I hadn't taken. And when I told the chair that I'd really like to teach a graduate seminar, he can say, oh, you can do that, in addition then to my 15-hour load. So since I'd had a lot of preparation to do, the dissertation didn't get much attention. So this was difficult.
Yes.
It took 7 years for me to get tenure, which was more or less the normal route at that time. I should say that while I came here with the expectation of being here only for 6 months, that didn't mean that that's what my contract said. In other words, more accurately, we had annual contracts at the pleasure of the legislature and the budget. Even people who had tenure had annual contracts at the pleasure of the legislature. In other words, there are a great many things that have changed. Once I was promoted and had tenure, it took me quite a long time to move along on the tenure track, the promotion track, and so on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I recall at one point complaining to the chair and saying, don't you think I'm ready for promotion to the next rank? And he looked at his papers and he said, I can't promote you, you're not earning enough. So I did get a raise that year, but raises were minimal and salaries were very, very low. So if there was discrimination, was it that the assumption was that married women didn't need money? Was it that I was the youngest member of the department? Was it that I was foreign born? Was it, you know, the list goes on.
Yes.
So I had two other experiences, which weren't really Ohio State experiences. One was that a colleague had a contact with the university, the most internationally famous in some ways university in Germany, and in Frankfurt, and encouraged me to apply for a Fulbright, which I did, and he said that he had been in Germany in the Fulbright, and it paid for his wife and child, and so on and so forth. When the Fulbright came through, for women there was no provision for paying for dependents. A husband who couldn't have worked in Germany.
Right.
Well, there was no money there, which meant that I couldn't accept. There was another part to that story, and that is that the Fulbright came through very late in the year, and I had to tell the chair whether I would be here in the fall, so I had to say, yes, I'll be here, I won't accept it if it comes. It came late because it didn't come for Frankfurt, it came for a place where I could not have been successful because it came for Stuttgart, which was a technical school. I would have had to teach statistics in German, which was way beyond my scope. So that is a kind of national discrimination, if you will.
Yes, yes.
When we wanted to buy a house, again, women, my salary would have had to be relevant to that. Women of childbearing age could get a federal housing loan.
Complicated, isn't it?
So there may have been discrimination on campus. There certainly was discrimination in the legal system.
Yes, yes. Well, within your department specifically, did you have any specific departmental discrimination, and did you have any mentors as you began to move up? It's really two questions.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think?
I think there was discrimination in with regard to promotion and salary. But beyond that, I don't. Later on, when anthropology became an independent department, the chair said, well, he wasn't promoting me to full professor because he wanted the new chair to have that opportunity. And that turned out to be complicated, and I did get promoted because this new person was actually delayed in being able to take over the chair.
Did you have any mentors during those early years?
What does that mean?
Mentors means guides. You're a mentor to me. I learned from
you.
Oh, no,
absolutely not.
You absolutely had none. Nobody came forth and just made sure that you're...
No, and mentors hadn't been invented yet.
I thought maybe someone in a similar kind of role, someone who came... No. You were pretty much on your own.
Pretty much, yes.
Can you describe other women in your department or in your college and sort of what was the climate like for them generally?
Well, there were very few women. As I said at the beginning, there were practically none. Eventually, there was a young woman who came, and of course she was immediately made department secretary, you know, to take notes and so on, and had no significant role.
Could you talk about the most powerful experiences you personally had at Ohio State?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm not sure what the question is either. As I look at it, I read it yesterday and I thought, powerful in terms of influencing your career or leading to decisions?
I wouldn't call it a powerful influence, but the chair did encourage me. I was a sociologist in 1963 to apply for a National Institute of Mental Health grant.
Uh-huh.
A Kennedy administration, 62 because the grant became effective in 63, the Kennedy administration was very much interested in encouraging or developing social scientists with mental health knowledge and skills.
Uh-huh.
And I, and at that time a junior woman in the department, and a psychiatrist who was really marginal to this whole thing, got first a two-year grant and then an additional 3 years. And that five-year grant to study dissociational states. We call it the cross-cultural study of dissociational states. Had a, really the basis for my career. Let me explain that.
Yeah, please do.
When I was in Haiti, I was studying community life in general. But in Haitian life, for 90% of the population at that time, there was an African-derived religion called Vodou, not Voodoo. And one of the important things in that religion was for people to go into trance, experience spirit possession, if you want to call it that. That is to say, acting out the identity of a spirit. And in Western history, spirit possession exists, and there's a lot of concern with exorcism. And this actually is the 40-year anniversary of the exorcist movie, as I saw on television last night. But in Haiti, the spirits are invited, and they act as healers and guides and so on. And that is the case because this religion is related to religion in West Africa, where that sort of thing goes on. And you have it in Cuba and in Trinidad and in Brazil and wherever people from Africa were imported and brought their traditions with them. At the same time, in the United States, you had talk about multiple personality, mm-hmm. and you had talk about exorcism, as I say, and so on. So it was also just the time when there was a great deal of interest in drugs, and going into altered states of consciousness was being developed.
Yes.
So we did a literature study for 2 years on 400 some societies and looked at the distribution of these behavior types of these traditions. And then in the second 3 years, a group of the grant, we sent people to do field work in Brazil and Mexico and so on. And we had publications that came out of this. And this was really the center, in some ways, of my research career.
Yes. Well, I want to turn now to your leadership role for women in the university. And let me say parenthetically, Erica, that I met you when you were head of the Council on Academic Excellence. So would you...
It was about 1980, I think.
I think it was 1980, and I was really quite in awe of you. And you've been a mentor to me ever since. But would you talk about generally about your role and or roles at Ohio State in, related to women?
Well, one thing is that we had many more women students in the department than men, although I have no numbers. And then when I needed research assistance, the chair decided that priority for teaching assistants should go to men. So the pool from which I drew was a pool of women. So my research group consisted of women. And of course there were secretary. The comments that I got from the research assistants and the secretaries was that they were amazed that you could have a group of women working together peacefully. There was this kind of notion that a lot of them had that women were incapable of cooperating, which I found startling, actually. So I think that taught me some things. And I was asked to participate in this fledgling group that we put together, partly because somebody in the administration, which was Adams, had been to a meeting that said that women's colleges could do things for women that co-ed schools couldn't. And he said, as I recall it, anything they can do, we can do better. You know? Just that seemed...
Sounds like Arthur Adams.
So we said, all right, we'll set up a group that will mentor students and will bring in faculty to mentor students and so on. And it turned out to be a very interesting experience of women from different parts of the university, whom I hadn't known before, to come together and talk about how to do this. Got some money for actually mentoring. And the young woman who came to work with me, followed me around a little bit and do some things in connection to my teaching mostly, discovered, you may remember that she didn't get her check. And upon investigation, it turned out that money was being handled by staff at the College of Education, and that woman had appropriated the money herself.
Oh my.
It took a little while to get that straight out. But that's memorable. And the Council on Academic Excellence for Women then underwent a variety of changes until later on it morphed into a support group for staff, more than faculty and staff rather than students.
Yes, yes, very interesting change. Was that the major sort of collective efforts relative to women that you participated in? Or were there others in those?
I'm aware of.
Uh-huh. But I must say, at the same time, you were mentoring a number of women students. You were So that was very significant.
Well, a number of the people who had been research assistants in my project went on to do field work, and I supervised their dissertation.
A personal note here, when you had your birthday party last year, Jane had a birthday party for you. Which one was it last year? Or a birthday party for you. Didn't Jane have a...
Yes.
Okay, and I noticed there were a number of your students there.
Yes.
They were had all been mentored by you over the years and gone into the field and become professors themselves.
But before that, for my 85th birthday, Helen Fairbauer in the German department and Dory Noyes in folklore put together a symposium.
Uh-huh.
Which didn't produce any publications, but it was extremely interesting. The first part of the symposium talked about my European background and brought in a man that Helen knew, who was also from Vienna and had a different kind of life, but had become a specialist in Germanic literatures and so on. And that brought in a very, that morning session brought in a very large number of people. And it went on for, and then an afternoon session, which was more specialized in anthropology. That was quite memorable.
Was that held at Ohio State?
Yes, at the Humanities Center, the building on Neal Avenue.
Well, I can't remember, Erica.
Well, I can't remember the title.
The two of us can't remember. When you left the university, and up until now, do you still, as you talk to friends and colleagues, believe that there continue to be problems for women at the university?
I know of a couple of women who were department chairs early on and met a considerable amount of opposition. Mm-hmm. And I found being a chair very difficult for a couple of reasons. The man I replaced was forced to resign because of a variety of bizarre kinds of behavior. And he was still around. And so there was, it later turned out he had a gun in the office, and the student who knew about it didn't tell me because she didn't want to worry me. And he brought in a tape recorder to faculty meetings, and somebody caught it and made a motion that tape recorders were not to be brought to meeting. I mean, he was just generally dangerous. Mm-hmm. And again, I had a secretary who was trying to be helpful to me and protect me so that she didn't tell me what she knew. Mm-hmm. And the others were all primarily very junior faculty. And when the new dean came in, he had a stack of items on his desk complaining about this man.
Did he do something? Did he do something about it?
Well, I'm about to tell you in more detail than you'd like to hear. Tom said to the dean, "Well, we are having a meeting on Friday. Why don't you come to the faculty meeting?" And then he himself didn't show up. And when the dean then went on to talk to him, it was a very hostile kind of conversation. And the dean then said, "Well, come to my office, I don't know, tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And before that, he called me, Tom called me, and said, "I have this appointment with the dean, and I want to be able to tell him that I have your unconditional support." Well, unconditional was a little too much for me. And I said, "There are a lot of things that we need. I'd like to hear some explanation about." And then he began to wheedle, "Well, we're friends," and so on. I said, "No, I think not." Mm-hmm. But there was another senior faculty member whom he had hired, with whom I talked, and he said, "Oh, I can handle him." Well, it didn't happen. Well, he was then forced to retire. Mm-hmm. Or at least retire from the chairmanship, but he was around. The rest of them were a bunch of young men who didn't like to have a woman, but an older woman, telling them anything. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy to be finished with it after a year and a half.
I'll bet you were.
I said a year and a half, I should say. 4.5 years.
4.5. That's a long time for that kind of job. Eric, I want to give you time to add anything that you want to add that you think we might have missed. But particularly, I'd like to have you comment on just where you think women are today, particularly at the university.
Well, I think women have made progress, obviously, but I have been retired for so long that mm-hmm. I really haven't kept up with it.
Right.
There are a larger number of women in the anthropology department, but it took quite a long time for one of them to be promoted to full professor.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. This has been perfectly wonderful.
And well,
I am sure that in years to come, there will be a lot of young women who are going to listen to this and get inspiration
from
you.
Well, I don't know. will I get a copy of it?
You will. You will get a copy of it, and you will be free to change or add as you wish and send it back so that the final one is approved
Jane
by you.
Wants to build me a monument, which is totally unrealistic and unnecessary. But
let's see. Hold on.